I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to Q&A Tuesday. This is episode number 9, where we deal with simple questions, or fairly tactical questions, not always dead simple, which come up from the Facebook group. So today we've got just 2 questions. If you want to join the Facebook group yourself, you're very welcome to come along and join us. We've got 390-odd members now, www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. So first question from Munir, who says, "Hey guys, I've had a great news today, top seller in my subcategory after less than a month. In order to keep delivering good product, I now need to do inspection before products leave China. I already paid 30% of my new order, which will be ready next week, and I'm looking for inspection companies to ensure the quality." So Munir has various different questions. First of all, Munir, congratulations, and let's deal with your question. So the first question is, what's the best practice? Should I pay for the 70% left before sending the product to inspection or after? So first point to make is that you don't probably need to send the product to inspection. Inspection companies would normally come to your factory rather than having the goods sent separately. And that is probably the way to do it as well, because you want to make sure that they can see what's happening on the ground, basically. You don't really want to separate the two things. And most companies would go to the factory anyway, okay? First thing. Second thing is, basically, you pay for it after inspection. So what happens is the following. Really, you need to create a list of quality control criteria, such as, for example, if you're selling a silicon spatula, then does it is it flexible? Is it too flexible and too soft? Is it too rigid so it doesn't bend at all? What else? Does it melt when it's put near a hot surface? So you might need to get somebody who's able to do that. Is it color fast? Does the color tend to change with heat, or is it just too gray or too dark a color or anything like that? I'm just thinking off the top of my head. You don't need to think off the top of your head. Basically, you can start with the obvious things that you could find wrong with an object of any kind that is your product. But 2 other things. If you have had your own customers, which you have had, Munir, then you can just go back to their complaints and any defects that have come up, either because they've told you through bad reviews or through email feedback or customer support emails. And then you can just make sure that you've got a list of those things. For example, if you've been selling, say, I'm just trying to think, if you've been selling felt tip pens and they sometimes dry out quite quickly and easily, then you can get somebody to test that. If the colors aren't always true to the colors that are supposed to be, then you could just check for the right colors, etc. This is all the top of my head stuff, but it should be obvious if you've had a product in the marketplace for a while and you've had good amounts of feedback what the issues are. Another way of doing it is to check your competitors' listings and look at the negative or generally critical feedback and reviews, I should say, and make sure you put those in your quality control criteria as well. You'll probably end up with, I don't know, 5, 10, more like 20 points, depending on how complex your product is. Ideally, you should build that into your purchase order and your purchasing process so that your supplier is also working on those criteria. You'll also end up with better quality that way. But it sounds like that's probably for the next purchase for you, Munir. So you need to do that. And then the other thing is you need to define a quality level, acceptable quality limit, or AQL. I would go for the highest one. Basically, there are 3 types of defects which an inspection company can identify. There's a critical defect, a major defect, and a minor defect. So for example, with a spatula, a critical defect might be that it melts or catches fire, which would endanger people and therefore is unacceptable. That should be set at 0%. And then typical for consumer products, you'd have 2.5% major defects, like maybe it bends so much that you can hardly scrape things off the pan. So in other words, it can't do its job that you get it for, the primary purpose. And a minor defect might be that it has lumps in it, or it's discolored or something like that. So when you are defining things for your supplier and for your inspection company, you need to define whether a defect you are listing they are checking for is a critical, major, or minor defect. And that's important because then you're basically going to set so-called AQL standards. And the typical one is 2.5% major defect, i.e. the product just doesn't work. Say if you had 100 products, if more than 2.5, i.e. 3 or more, are defective, then you know, they really don't work, then you would reject the shipment, okay? Or if more than 4% of them have minor defects like sort of bubbles, strange sort of shapes on them, miscoloring, excessive amounts of dust or something like that. Okay, so it's very important that you define an AQL level. There's AQL 1, 2, and 3. 2 is fairly typical for consumer products. It's the one I just said. Bear in mind, though, that I would go for the highest AQL level, which is probably about 1% major defects, because on Amazon, you have very fussy buyers, and even a so-called minor defect in terms of the AQL, i.e. inspection language, and the supplier's expectations around quality will probably count for them as a minor defect, but it could be for a fussy Amazon buyer that in their mind, it's a major thing, right? So be fussy about quality. Now, what happens then is you set the quality control criteria, you set the barrier with AQL as the overall sort of acceptable level of limits, the acceptable quality limit, I should say, the acceptable overall level of or amount of defects. And then once that inspection's done, you would then look at the inspection report, which you'll get sent by the inspection company, and then you'll either accept the shipment or reject it. Now, in theory, you are right to reject it if it fails quality control. In practice, you have quite a bit of leeway. Obviously, if you find that it's very close to what you think is acceptable, then you can accept the shipment in order to keep things moving, but go back to the supplier and say, you'll need to make up for that next order by giving me some free products, or, you know, not free, but in replacement for the defective ones. Or you keep an eye on it and decide that, you know, you might not use that supplier again in the future, or whatever you want to do. It's up to you. But anyway, once you've accepted the batch, then you send the 70% balance over to your supplier, and then that's it. Then they, once they receive it, will normally package the goods up and then ship them off or pass them on to your freight forwarder if you're using a freight forwarder, etc. Right now, so that's the basic practice, that's the basic sort of workflow. Sorry, it sounds a little bit more complex than you were possibly expecting. Obviously, you can't just hand over to an inspection company and say, make this good. You need to be specific, otherwise they won't work for you. And that's particularly true in China. You need to spell everything out. But anyway, you should spell everything out. And it's very, very true with your relationship with the supplier that the more you spell things out, the more right you have to expect quality and the more likely you are to get it. The other questions you were asking, Munir, are inspection companies fast enough to process the order, or will it take them some time? And the other question, according to your experience, could a 250 items, that's about 80 grams each, take more than one inspection day? This product is very simple and has few moving parts. Well, to answer that question first, I think that sounds like it would be just one inspection workday. Bear in mind that AQL, you would use certain tables. So if you're inspecting at AQL 3, I believe that's the highest level, but whichever the highest level is, and I'll put links in the show notes, you can check for yourself. If you had, for example, 500 unit order, which is a typical order size for a lot of us, and it was for my first shipment, for example, that I had inspected, you would remove 80 units at random and inspect those. And then you check, according to the AQL tables, what that tells you. There's some heavy statistics behind it. Don't get overstressed. So in other words, 250 items, whatever, they probably need to inspect, what, 50 items? I don't know exactly. They'll use the AQL tables. So that could certainly be done in a man day. That's not a problem at all. Are they fast enough to process the order? Well, that depends on how much you plan in advance. If you tee up an inspection company in advance and then tell your supplier, which you should tell them before you even put the order in, ideally, that you're going to get it inspected, then give them each other's email and phone numbers. Then they should be able to liaise about getting an inspection done. Don't assume that they will chase up, okay? Don't assume anything, chase up everything, however, or check everything. But that's the best way to do it. And in that way, it might just take them a couple of days from end of production to get the inspection company in. Depends how busy they are, how physically close they are, and, you know, that sort of thing. Obviously, if you run up to quarter four, it may take longer. So that's kind of how long is a piece of string, but it could be as little as 3 days from end of production to inspection being completed. It could be much, much longer, depending if you're disorganized and or it's a busy time of year. So talk to the different inspection companies. You did ask about some very specific inspection companies. Any experience with Asia Inspection, FBA Sourcing China, or Topwin Inspection? I haven't, although it's probably time I started considering interviewing some of these guys from podcasts, if we can find people over in Asia who have good enough English to do that. But Asia inspection is supposed to be very good, but they cost about $300 a man day. And apparently they are useful if you have really tricky products. But if you have simple products, I think Trigo.com is something that a couple of our guests have mentioned. And that's about $100 per man day. So if it is a simple product, I would just go with Trigo.com. The other ones I don't know about, worth investigating. If you find out, Munir, come back to us in the Facebook group and let us know. So hope that makes sense in terms of the process. It sounds a bit involved. It is a little bit involved, but it is important. If you're going to do quality control, it's all about details, really. So you need to get the details right. Check out the AQL tables, and then Munir, or in fact anyone else listening, got any other questions about that, come back to me in the Facebook group and I'll be happy to answer them best as I can. Okay, question number two from David, who asks about eBay and pricing. An interesting sort of more of a suggestion here. eBay, anyone use eBay as a pricing model, says David. For example, take the average selling price people are using to resell your product on eBay and test this as your selling price on Amazon. If I do this, I could likely dramatically increase my net profit. Just having resellers on eBay tells me my price may be too low. Any thoughts? Well, David, yeah, my first thought is just because you've got resellers doesn't automatically mean they are actually managing to make sales, right? So on eBay, or for that matter on Amazon, you can't really see what they're doing. I mean, if you've got resellers on your listing that are taking the buy box off you, you can see if they're making sales, or at least you can see if they're in the buy box. So you get some kind of hint. When it's on eBay, I don't know if there's a way of doing that. It's not a platform I've used myself yet. It's time I use Joe Lister, which Kevin King suggested, which is something else to look at. And by the way, if you didn't catch Kevin King's episode, do have a listen to it. He was an amazing powerhouse of information, that man. So do have a listen. But I don't have experience of eBay, but I think just because somebody is trying to resell your product doesn't mean they are actually selling. And the other thing is, just because they are actually making sales doesn't mean they have any good sales volume. If they're making one sale a week or one every 2 weeks, they'll still have a listing up and they'll still have sales showing. So the answer, though, the real answer, those are my thoughts, but the real answer is test and measure and then you'll know. So what you need to do is use Splitly.com, which I think costs me about £25 a month, which I'm using at the moment, or CashCowPro.com, which I think is about $25 a month. So I'll probably be checking that out myself soon. Either of those or various other things now that are out there that will split test things for you, and simply do a split test on your price. Now, I know that Splitly.com will actually test your price specifically with the objective of maximizing profit. So you can just set up a price split test there with the objective of measuring profit, and it will simply rotate the prices for a while and show you which makes the maximum profit. So job done, you know. I suspect you'll find that your eBay price is way optimistic, but it's worth testing, and that's the only way to get genuine data. So if you do that, David, bully for you, because 90% of people don't bother checking, they just work on guesswork and copying everybody else. But if you do actually test it, then you are going to learn very useful data, and also it would be fascinating to hear about it. So come back to us in the Facebook group, and David, and let us all know. So that's it, guys, for today. Pretty brief one. As ever, keep the questions coming. There's some very, very good questions that come up on the tactical level, which sometimes, like with the inspection thing, imply a bit more of a strategic approach, which is to say that, really speaking, with quality control, you want to build that into your process from the purchase right the way through inspection as well. And you have consistent criteria and you have a consistent quality level that you lay out from the beginning. You will probably get charged a slightly higher rate from a supplier if you go in saying that you want incredible quality. So there is probably the point at which to do that. It might be after the purchase order in some ways, but on the other hand, quality does cost. So if you want ultra cheap products, they are normally a bit rubbish. I mean, I've just ordered some products which are basically a version of a product that I sell. It's the exact same model, basically. And they're manufactured, however, by somebody else. And I've inspected them myself. I got sort of about 50 of them over from a different supplier just to look at it by hand, just to see if I could get a cheaper price. Certainly the price per unit is somewhat cheaper, but the quality is definitely less consistent. So to a degree in China, you do get what you pay for. So in short, I would go in with clear quality control criteria, make that clear up front. If you get quoted a slightly higher price, try and knock them down, but accept that a bit of quality is going to cost you a bit more, and then follow up at the end of the process of manufacturing with the same quality control criteria with very clear tests. And then you should get some degree of consistency, and it's also more professional, and your buyer will respect you more for that, because that's how the big box retailers behave, or the, you know, the big wholesalers when they approach Chinese factories. And you want to act like the big guys as much as possible, and then you'll get more of the same treatment. Copying the tactics and the strategies of the best is, of course, one of the best things you can do to really get your business to leap forward. However, it has to be said that if you are copying it along with 10,000 other people, you are going to be competing on the same exact strategies, which is one of the big problems that exists with these massive groups that are out there online, where people just copy each other. And even though to start with it was an excellent tactic or strategy, or even entire business model, they can become invalid over time if everyone's doing the same thing. So sooner or later, you do need to make yourself a member of some kind of insiders club, effectively, of people who really, really know what they're doing or are learning together, but are sharing it only in a small group. That's one of the reasons why, by response to popular demand, I have created a mastermind group as well as mentoring. It's nothing I'm going to do a hard sell on, because basically we've only got two places left. So that is at the time of recording. So there may be none left when you go there. But if you're interested in checking that out, just go to www.amazingfba.com/mastermind. At the time of recording, 21st of June in 2016 summer, the cost is just £95 a month. That's just a beta testing cost while I get things up and running. Obviously, that will go up to a bit more of a serious cost later on, but it's not going to be seriously expensive. But that's kind of going to be break-even-ish, really. But I just wanted to get things going and to see if I can help people more. I love interacting with listeners in more face-to-face situations. So if you want to check that out, www.amazingfba.com/mastermind. As I said, there's only a couple of places left. If you find that there's no spaces left when you apply, just put yourself on the waiting list and I'll get back to you as quick as I can if a space opens up. But whether you go for that or your own mastermind somewhere else, or create one, if you really want the hassle of running one, then get yourself into a group of fellow people who are doing well but are at the same kind of level as you. There's no point in going with somebody's streets ahead of you, because they will have different issues they're trying to solve, which will be irrelevant to you. If they're trying to import container loads of stuff and you're just starting with your first or second order of your first, second, third product, that's kind of not going to be very relevant. So just bear that in mind. But whichever way you do, try and copy what the great guys are doing, but try and get it privately. Don't just copy things in massive Facebook groups. And the other thing I would just say, just once again, having worked with yet another mentee today who's thinking of going to dangerously competitive product groups, for goodness sake, differentiate yourself. Don't just do what everyone else is doing, or you'll get the same result, which is either no sales or some sales but no profit. So my last plea to you is, please differentiate yourself. You'll do yourself a lot of favors. Okay, that's it. Good hunting. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.